Hi, my name's John Connors. I'm the founder and head instructor of Connors Martial Arts here in Norwood, Massachusetts. We teach Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, Muay Thai, kickboxing, and mixed martial arts. And what we're talking about in our podcast is the power of the tribe. If you want to make a major transformation in your life, you want to become more confident, you want to get in great shape, you want to lose weight, whatever positive change you want to make in your life, it's going to be that much easier to do if you find the right supportive tribe. Power of the tribe. And I'm here with my co-host, Dan Robin.
Okay, John.
Good. How you doing, buddy? Dan, I thought it would be interesting today to talk to you about your experience in martial arts when you decided you wanted to join your tribe, make a change in your life.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I thought about this a lot, too, because I thought, well, maybe you could correct me if I'm wrong, but my thinking was this, that like a lot of guys like yourself that started gyms, and it doesn't have to be a martial arts gym. It could be someone starting a basketball league or a yoga gym or anything. They kind of come from a place where it's their comfort zone. That might not be true, and we can talk more about your background later, but they might not realize how hard it can be for someone to go from a completely different sort of background into something like martial arts. So you can be like, someone like myself had no combat sport experience at all when I started.
Now, how old were you, Dan?
My 30s. Well, okay, so I was going to say, my very first experience was my 30s, other than sort of remembering on the spot. Here's
okay, let's set the stage. You're in your 30s.
Yeah.
What made you decide that you wanted to do something like this? Where were you in your life? What was happening?
Well, I was just in my 30s with like three kids and a suburban dad.
Dad. You're still kind of suburban dad.
I still am. Not only was I not doing combat sports or had experience in combat sports, I wasn't doing sports at all. Like I always kind of kept somewhat fit, you know, ran a little, lifted a little weights, but I wasn't doing any sports.
You have good genes. You seem like you're always like relatively fit looking.
Yeah, I don't really tend to balloon up. You have almost kind of seeming no matter what I do.
Right. You have like a trim dad bod.
Yeah, exactly.
At the worst. Little muffin top, but not a big beer belly.
At the worst, yeah.
So you're in your 30s. You're wearing your Bermuda shorts. You're flipping burgers in the backyard. You're the suburban dad.
The one thing I'll say I had that I'm not sure if other people had, I was always curious about martial arts. You know, like, and I almost don't get how any guy can't be somewhat curious. You know, growing up, it was pre-UFC. You grow up and you'd think, what are these things? There's Kung Fu and there's Taekwondo and there's karate. And that's what was so engaging about the first UFCs, of people saying who will actually win this fight.
Yep.
That it really caught my interest and a lot of people's interest to see what are these things? How do they work? Like,
when I was a kid, if somebody had a black belt in karate, they were basically a superhero. They were invincible.
We'd whisper about kids in our high school with a black belt.
It was like a black belt.
But if you can remember that far back, it was still a mystery. It would be like, I remember a kid in my high school with a black belt, and it would be like, he can do a backflip. Like totally like irrelevant things like that. You know what I mean? Like, I saw him do a backflip once.
And there was a guy from my town, my area, who was legitimately a badass. He was the first person with the six-pack that I've ever seen in my life. People don't realize now, everyone's running around these gyms with six-packs, eight-packs. You know, they're just ripped abs. Back in the 70s, there was no six-packs. I think Bruce Lee was the only person on the planet with a six-pack. And this guy, Gary Eblen, he had a six-pack. And he was legitimately a badass. And he still is. He's a great guy. And he was a legitimate badass. Yeah.
But mostly it was like whispered about. And you didn't sort of get it. And everyone was sort of uncomfortable. It was sort of like, could the big football player beat the karate guy? And like nobody knew what it was.
Oh,
and like,
what's
Kung Fu? And so the one martial art I did was in college. I took either a semester or two semesters of Kung Fu.
Okay.
Did you know I had a Kung Fu background?
I could tell the way you walk.
You
walk across rice paper without leaving any impressions
and
on it.
I could at any moment in the gym break out my Kung Fu.
That's it. You have a very circular way of moving. I noticed that.
But so it was literally like the big reveal at the end of the year was like the instructor told us what animal we were. Like it was
Kung Fu. Let me guess. Was it some bird?
It was not a bird.
Not a bird. I was thinking
cooler.
A crane.
Cooler.
Cooler.
Yeah, I didn't want to.
Oh, right. Of course, he's going to give me something cool.
I didn't want to be the crane.
Tell me.
The snake.
The snake. I should have known. I should have known. You are a freaking snake. Yeah. I should have known that.
I don't think it was based on personality.
No.
I think it was just how I struck.
You
man.
Struck.
And I just struck. But they were
a lot
all
of
like,
acceleration.
But it was
Bam.
All like, you know, he'd be like, you're a dragon. To like, because the dragon is unpredictable, And it'd be like, you mean uncoordinated? Like, you know, someone just like flail across the room and it would be like, that's a dragon.
You're there. A dragon. You have a rare spastic quality to your movement.
Tiger, dragon. So the only reason, so that's my only thing I did. And again.
What kind of snake did they specify? They it must be a cobra, right?
It was just a general. I honestly think he was like going down the line and he got to me and he barely remembered who I was. And he's like, snake. Like, I don't know, it's kind of like Ben. And,
he ran out like, of other animals.
He's like, I don't know, like a bigger person gets tiger. You're kind of skinny. It's like, I think that's how I remember him saying it is like,
he's like, snake. Yeah, you're a dangerous, snake. Impressive animal of some sort.
Yeah, moving on. And so it was just like the one thing I knew at the time. So one thing it shows is that I was curious. Like I took it because I was curious.
Right.
And secondly, I knew it wasn't right. Like I knew I was like.
You knew what wasn't right, Dan?
That the kung fu was not right. That I did not learn how to fight.
You didn't learn how to fight.
I was like, I know that this would not help me in a fight.
Right. You felt like you, if you were in a barroom and shit went down, your snake-like abilities probably weren't going to help you.
I would not be able to like windmill my arms in some kung fu way. And but I'll give you another example. I knew it wouldn't work for anyone else in the room. Mm. Like there'd be some guy like one semester ahead of me, like. Uber sort of nerd kind of personality, but he had one semester ahead of me, so he'd be sort of like, you're doing that wrong,
that's very funny. I took I think 4 months of karate training when I was about 14 or 15, I think, I can't remember. It was called American Combat Karate, and it was actually some real legitimate fighting, man, for back then. And we did real sparring. And I think I got to orange belt or something. And then I was allowed to spar, which was pretty quickly, actually. It was only 4 months. I got a couple belt promotions. And I had to spar this purple belt. And I was like, holy shit, I'm going to spar a purple belt. Holy cow, what am I going to do? And we had our little booties on, like little footsie foam things over the feet. And we had, I think the gloves were almost like MMA gloves. They weren't like big 16-ounce boxing gloves. And
yeah, I had some of those.
We probably like we didn't have any headgear. So then I sort of faked a low kick to this. And they didn't teach us to do this. It was just my instinct. And the purple belt, he lowered his forearm to block my low kick in the pattern that they taught us. And then I just windmilled like a hillbilly overhand right. And man, I cracked this poor kid right in the face and he staggered backwards. And then I was shocked. I said, he's a purple belt. And I landed that punch. How the heck did that happen? And then the instructor stopped it and he said, well, you know, he's being a little sneaky. So he insulted my technique. He's like, I'm being sneaky. Like, that's a bad thing in fighting.
Like, the feint was sneaky.
Yeah, it was sneaky.
And I think that's one thing. There's so many things we take for granted now. But back then, we didn't know. And we, you know, were completely oblivious to it, which is that you have to spar to learn. Like, you have to spar.
Right, you got it.
So, like, the kung fu, there was no legit sparring. Like, you know,
I think that's a very key point, Dan, because I still hear guys today. I don't have these conversations, but I overheard a conversation a year ago. This guy was explaining to this young woman who was trying to impress, which is usually how these conversations are going. And the martial art that he trained was so deadly that they couldn't spar. And he wasn't allowed. His instructor could not go into mixed martial arts because, for God's sakes, he'd be killing people. And
people still talk that way.
They
this
do.
Recently?
And that's fine. I don't mind that. But here's the one that cracks me up. They go, you know, those professional MMA fighters, their training would work against them in the street. Like, they would actually get themselves into trouble. And they parcel out this nonsense to people, usually to some young woman they're trying to impress who doesn't know any better. She's like, oh, wow, what you're doing is so deadly. And those poor professional mixed martial artists are just going to get their ass kicked in the street, which is, I mean, John Jones could go into a bar and literally fight probably 10
finish
guys and murder all of them with his bare hands.
Yeah. Or take it away from MMA. Think of like Mike Tyson. Be like, oh, that'll work against him.
That'll work against him. He's going to fall. Somebody's going to ring a bell and he's going to think the round is over.
Yeah,
he's
they're
going to
throw a bottle at him. He's going to think the range is determined by fists and someone's going to have a bottle and have an extra 6 inches.
Well, there is something to it. Like if somebody stabs you, you know, you basically don't want to be getting in any fights anywhere if you can avoid it, of course.
But the idea that it doesn't work. I thought, like, we used to hear that all the time. I guess it still exists. It's just we're not in that world of, like, the deadly art. Like, my guy can't be in the UFC because he'll break every... But if you remember when UFC started, we didn't know if that was true. We thought it might be true.
It might be true.
There's people that can't, that are just going to kill everyone.
Well, you got to use a little
common
sense.
At least I didn't know. Maybe someone knew.
Right. People like to believe things. You know, there's some stories that have a quality that people want to believe it, and they'll believe it, and they'll pass it on. You know, before the internet, Dan, you must remember before the internet, there was a thing called urban legends. Yeah. So there were these stories that were passed around pre-internet that were just word-of-mouth stories that people would tell each other. I think I took a course, actually, my freshman year at Harvard that was about urban legends. We call it a gut course. You know what I mean? You pretty much got an A. It's a lot of fun. But one of the things was, if you palm strike somebody in the nose, you're going to drive their nose bone into their brain and you'll kill them. Which, I bet you there's people out there today that believe this.
But when I first started looking into, looking into martial arts, I saw some of these things that were like the shortcuts, right? Like, how do you just defend yourself in a street fight and win in this one move? Or like, here's two moves, and it'd be like a palm strike to the nose is what you see.
Right.
Like,
then if you think about it.
So you don't have to study for years. You just.
Do you know anybody who died by their nose bone going into their brain by some accidental freak movement? Like, so it has to be the palm. What if a boxer punches somebody in the nose? Why haven't I ever heard of anyone dying by their nose bone going into their brain? Car accident, fall. But never has happened.
It's actually interesting. And like, because I don't know if you had this same feeling about the early UFCs, but what I remember is the first thing is it was amazing. You were like, I can't, is this even legal? Like, they're allowed
very
to
exciting.
Fight? Like, is it real? You know, is this fake? And then it was very exciting. But then, like, UFC 3, UFC 4, for a while, I was almost like, not directly, but indirectly wondering if like some ancient kung fu guy was going to like come out of the mountains. You know what I mean? Be like, I've heard of this tournament, and just like do his, you know, his magic, you know, the spinning kicks, and just be like, wait, like UFC's big enough that it drew in this magician, you know, like this guy that's just incredible. I was like, is someone going to appear? And then by UFC 5, somewhere around 5, it was like, it's not, there's no one like that.
Well, I think,
and it was almost like a letdown in that it was like, wait, so the best fighters, the toughest guys are like wrestlers and you know, like,
well,
it was sort
I
of
think
like
Royce Gracie sort of played that part, though. He kind of came out of nowhere, and at least in my mind, you know, maybe not in Brazil, and he was such a baby-faced looking guy, and for him to beat these big guys and these scary looking guys,
he
that
was
a revelation.
Magic. Because the thing is, he'd get someone in a triangle and everyone would be like, you'd see him tap out and you'd be like, what happened?
The commentators didn't even know what was going on half the time.
He just gave up, and it was like, why did he give up? What happened?
It did seem like magic. It was really amazing. So back to your story. So you're in your 30s.
Other than my kung fu background.
You got your kung fu background. That was in college.
Yeah. So years.
Like a semester
or
something.
Years and years later.
To your point, well, let's make a blanket statement. All men are fascinated by fighting.
I think so. A lot of women, too.
But I think men they feel that they need to know how to fight. It's an essential skill set. And I think that if they don't learn it, it can develop into an insecurity.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Oh, for sure. And then you get, I see it all the time, and you get people talking, a lot of guys, especially if they're sort of a little bit like athletic, like maybe they played high school football or they feel this need to kind of talk tough. And they start getting very uncomfortable when it gets into like, oh, well, I train and they haven't trained. And they sort of feel like, well, maybe I could still beat you in a fight. You know, they sort of get like sort of uncomfortable or offer their opinions. Like a lot of guys will be like, are you crazy? Like, you know, the top boxers would destroy the top MMA guys in an MMA match just because they're so much better, so much more athletic. And I'll be like, what are you basing this on? Like, you don't watch MMA.
Right.
You barely watch boxing.
Right.
You don't know anything.
But everyone has an opinion. Don't you remember when you were a young guy? In my neighborhood, my town, there was a lot of fighting. And there was essentially, I had a hierarchy in my mind of who the toughest people were. So-and-so, he's the toughest guy. He's the toughest guy in Rosendale. That's the town I grew up in. So you would regionalize it. He's the toughest guy in Rosendale. That guy's the toughest guy in West Roxbury or something like this. And you kind of had a pecking order of who the toughest guy was and who was the second toughest and so forth and so on. And it was always exciting if there was like the one and two guy might go into it or the number one guy from here was going to fight the number one guy from there. And I almost sensed that there was natural promoters. You know what I mean? There was guys who would try to instigate fights in order to iron out who was just a superior fighter, who's number two and who's number three.
Yeah. The funny thing, my difference is I'd say I went to a town and a high
school. By the way, I wasn't on the
you
list
weren't
at
the,
all.
You weren't on the pecking order?
No.
You weren't ranked. For my town, I'd say almost no one fought. There was still a ranking.
Right.
But it was based on nonsense. It was based on this guy's big, this guy's aggressive, this guy's
that's
mean.
That's my whole point. It's a natural thing to kind of create this pecking order. Yeah. And it's a whole fascination about it. You're right. So
at least your
not
guys,
actual
in your town, they had to actually win a fight. Like in my town, they just
Yeah, people actually smash each other's
face. And I guess it's probably more common. More schools are probably like the town I grew up in now because they don't allow fighting anymore.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So, but I bet they still have like, oh, I would not want to fight this guy. And like, and they're talking about a guy who they've never seen fight. There's never been in a fight in his life, probably.
Right.
But he seems kind of mean or seems kind of big.
How much can you drink and still drive safely? Trick question. You should never get behind the wheel after you've been drinking. Not even one. Be smart. If you plan on drinking, hand the keys off to someone who isn't or call a cab. Make the right choice and everyone gets home safe.
So we all have this natural fascination with fighting. You sort of looked into it in college in Kung Fu and you realized, this really isn't what I'm... This isn't fighting.
Yeah,
this
I'm not learning it.
Something else. And then
I used to feel like, again, even in the Kung Fu, which came back later, where, you know, some more experienced guy would be sparring with me and like sort of maybe using his Kung Fu and slapping me on the head or something. And I'd be like, you know, if you slap me again, I'm going to stop doing Kung Fu
and punch your lights
up. I'm going to beat the crap out of you. Like,
I'm just going to throw
you on the ground and just like...
Right. But we should clarify, this isn't all Kung Fu. This is just the Kung Fu at, what, Cornell University?
Yeah.
Kung Fu
class
that you
took. Yeah, they're super tough guys that do any martial arts.
Well, there's also Kung Fu that is combat sports, too.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And Kung Lee, that's where he came from. And he's an amazing martial artist and an amazing fighter.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he would take you, Dan.
Kung Lee? Well, I don't know. He's older now. But of course.
So, of course.
There could have been tough guys in even in that class at Cornell.
Right.
Like
absolutely.
Could have won just because they're a tough guy or athletic guy. Like,
right.
But it was not really good technique to learn.
Wasn't what you were looking for. So then fast forward, you're in your 30s. What are you doing? Are you working? You're a father of three.
Yeah.
You're working a job.
Yeah.
White collar job.
Cubicle. Yeah. So I didn't actually pursue martial arts. What happened was I brought my daughter in. I was like, should I learn karate? You know, there was karate was the closest thing in town. And I was like, it'll be good for her as a girl to learn to defend herself. And,
right.
And they have a good karate program in the middle of Walpole. It's been there for like 25 years.
To get confidence.
And, and they're just good instructors and they're friendly and people like it. And so she was doing that. And they're great with the kids.
Yep.
And I was talking to the instructor and saying, you know, talking about the UFC.
Yep.
And he said, I know some Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Cool.
And he said, I could, on the side, like while your daughter's doing class, we could go into another room and you could learn Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Private. And I was like, oh, cool. Like, because I'm here anyway.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Cool.
I was like, perfect. In retrospect, he didn't know Brazilian jiu-jitsu was the issue. But I didn't know that, you know? I didn't know at the time. So he was like, teaching me Brazilian jiu-jitsu the way some of the kids' karate program went. Like, if you learn these two sweeps, you get a blue belt.
Okay.
If you learn two more, you'll get a purple belt.
Right.
And you'll learn three more, brown belt. Like, I could have been a black belt in jiu-jitsu in like a year and a half. So
when did it dawn on you that he didn't have the level of expertise that you thought he might initially?
It didn't dawn on me, except I still had that feeling. So even from there, so then he said, you could also learn karate here.
Okay.
So then I expanded what I was doing. So I was doing the jiu-jitsu and the karate all at this school.
Nice.
I like nice people there, good people there, but it was... And by the way, this is a school where the Florian brothers started their martial arts training.
Very cool.
Kenny and Keith. But you were learning forms.
Katas.
Katas. And, yeah. And you weren't allowed to spar. And like if someone got hit, they'd get furious. And,
okay.
You know, like
they're trying to keep
careful.
It safe.
And, yeah. It was safe. And it was family oriented.
Yep.
The thing is, I had that same feeling as in the Kung Fu class where I was like, but if I really want to beat you, I'll stop doing this karate.
Right.
And I'd beat you up. Like,
just start throwing
maybe, I'm not
some
saying everyone, makers. But like mostly that's how I felt.
Right.
And I might have told you the story once where I just was physically stronger than a guy in there who was like a black belt.
Okay.
But we allowed wrestling. And I'm not a wrestler, but I was just physically.
So you were allowed to do some grappling.
Yeah, in this one time, yeah.
Yep.
And so I just kind of threw him down, got on top of him, and I was like hovered over him. And he's like looking up at me, lying on his back, and he says, well, you know, if I was allowed to do some other things, you'd be in big trouble right now. And I'm like, he's on his back.
I'm looking down at
I know like, I appear completely helpless. Yeah. But what you don't like, realize, so I a few like, more years of study, you'll yeah, realize yeah, you're like, actually yeah. in big trouble, mister.
So I said to him, I'm kind of angry. I'm like, what would you do? And he's like, well, I could do this. And he grabs my thumb and kind of like squeezes it like this painful way. And I was like, but I could hammer your face into jelly. You know what I mean? I'm like, what? You're squeezing my thumb. That's what happens a lot where there are people say, like, in the street. I'm like, but if it was the street, I could gouge your eyes out, or I could do, I'm on top of you.
Right.
And so I had that same feeling where I'm like, everyone here, and he was one of the experienced black belts, you know, and I was like,
That's hilarious stuff. But let me back up just a little bit. Mm-hmm. So what gave you the impetus to start down this journey? I know you're saying you brought your daughter in, but I suspect you had something else inside of you that was going on.
I think it's the same thing that happened. Like, it's an offshoot of why I went in college. Like, it starts with this curiosity.
Right.
And like, doesn't anyone want to know? Like, first of all, don't you want to know how to defend yourself? Don't you want to know how to fight? And when I remember being 14 and being told, like, to be a black belt, which to me at the time was a superhero, be like, it'll take 5 years. And at 14, you're like, well, that's forever.
Right.
At 30, in your 30s, you're like, well, wait, 5 years, I could do that.
Yeah.
So I was thinking about it and I was like, you know, you're at that point in your 30s where it's like, I can go on to just become like the pot-bellied 40-year-old dad, or I could be a superhero in 5 years, you know? And I was like, and it's not that hard. All of a sudden you realize in your 30s where you're like, wait, a 5-year journey is not that long,
right?
And not that expensive, and I have the time. And
I started in my 30s as well, and I had 2 kids, and I had my own business, but it was a very white collar business, and I had a button down shirt, I think, and a tie, and you know, khakis or something, shoes, and I would lift weights, I'd do all the boring stuff, bench press, and I'd go jogging with my business partner, Mark, great guy, and it was so tedious. But I started to lose touch. You know, I played a lot of sports in high school. I was a football player and a wrestler. I wasn't a fighter in the streets, really. I was too busy with academic and sports and whatnot. But I was fascinated by fighting. A boxing fan back, Joe Frazier, Muhammad Ali, back in the 70s. And I did some boxing as a kid. But I was at that point where I had invested so much of my life into being a great husband, a great dad, and a great business person. So I was working so much. I just felt like people started to look at me as this dowdy, boring business person, this boring dad. And I realized that there was a savage inside of me that I was losing touch with. And I said, I got to get that savage back. And I think it was in January, so it was sort of a New Year's resolution thing. And I said, I'm going to finally do it, man. Looked in the Yellow Pages. It was in the late 90s, and the UFC was in my mind, and I knew Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu in my mind was the most badass martial art. And I'm like, I got to do whatever the most badass thing is, whatever that means. I don't even know what that means. And I found Boston Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu was in the Yellow Pages over in Watertown. I went over there, took a class, and the moment I stepped on the mat, I felt like I had come home. And it was just awesome. And I started training immediately and as much as possible, and it was wonderful.
So you came at it from a slightly different place.
You were
pretty strong and athletic.
But I was feeling a lack. I was feeling a void in myself. I was feeling like I was losing touch with my identity. You know, when the UFC first came out, I don't know if you know this, Dan, or you remember it. It was almost like pornography. Like you could go to, what was it, Blockbuster Video and rent them. But
they
kind of
eyeball
like
you. Yeah, exactly. Like, it's almost like renting a porno. You know,
it's exactly
sort of
like renting a porno.
Like, okay.
Right, you creep. Like, here you go, creep. And you're a dad. It was really bad. It was sort of like doing something dangerous.
As far as you, the way you started, it's similar, but it's slightly different that you were like, I'm losing touch with something I had. I think there are people, like I have friends that are even more so less athletic than me.
Right.
Less in shape than me. And they're sort of like, I'm trying to tell them like, you know, you could actually learn enough to be able to beat the vast majority of people in a fight, and they sort of don't even believe me. You know, they're sort of like, me? They're like, me? I could never.
Well, when I was a kid, when I was a teenager doing the karate, my brother hung around with my brother's 2 years older than me, and he had a lot of guys who were super tough. Like the toughest guy in the town was Paul DeGrandis. His nickname was Camungus. They'd say there's a Camungus among us. And this guy was the scariest, hairiest. You know, he's 13 years old. He had hair coming out of his back, his chest. He would wear... I hope he doesn't hear this because he might track
you're
me down
still
and wring my
scared.
Neck. Oh, my God, yeah. He would wear a sweatshirt to the beach because he was so hairy, he felt self-conscious. He was just a phenomenal force. I saw a guy take, you know what a crook lock is? It's two pieces of metal that slide together. It hooks to your brake to your steering wheel, old device to protect your car. I saw a guy take that, smash it over his head, and the thing break into two pieces. And then Camungus just grabbed the guy and thrash him like a... You know, like a silverback gorilla killing somebody. So when I was taking karate, he would come up to me, okay, kick me. Try some of your karate, which, of course, I would never go near the guy. He was so scary. But, yeah, those are the types of guys that we would see as fighters, and that's what we thought fighting was.
And that's who you think goes into the gym.
Right, know? That guy probably never trained fighting in his life. Well, he didn't need to. You know, he was such a
jump ahead, but we've seen, I'm sure you've seen many times, people that come into the gym saying, I'm a street fighter, or like, I'm
real. Oh.
And they, you, I think you told me they pretty consistently don't stick around as much.
I've never seen a self-proclaimed street fighter come in and be able to do anything worth. Other than some of them have high pain tolerance. Yeah. A lot of them are the sadistic, so they don't mind being cruel to somebody else, but generally they're not that good. And you, if somebody is getting in a lot of street fights, they probably have some impulse control issues, so they generally don't train long enough and consistently enough to develop real skills. That's, you know, that's a generalization, but I'm sure a lot of the really great fighters are natural fighters anyways, you know?
Yeah.
If you ever read the book Cinderella Man?
I saw the movie.
You saw the movie. Yeah. It's a great movie, right?
Yeah.
So the villain in the movie is Max Baer. In the book, he comes across as a more well-rounded character. Like he's kind of a happy-go-lucky guy in the book, and I think that's probably closer to life. I think he was in the Pacific Northwest, and him and his brothers were in a bar having fun, and they somehow started teasing some big lumberjack, and they got on the wrong side of this huge dude. 300-pound dude came over and started a fight with Max Baer, who said he'd never really been in a fight in his life. He goes, the guy started punching me, and in the middle of the fight, I realized his punches didn't hurt. So then I decided to hit him, and I hit him once and put him to sleep, like knocked him unconscious. So that guy is a natural fighter.
Yeah.
So he can naturally take a punch, naturally. Sounded like a Marx Brothers movies. His brother said, you should be a prize fighter. And he like immediately became a professional fighter.
Like, famous 100 years later.
Yeah, and then like a year later was the world champion, you know? I'm probably... abbreviating that story, but I think there are people out there like that. But back to your story, you weren't feeling so much a void in your life, but you still had curiosity about fighting.
But then what started creeping up on me was the same feeling where I was like, so this is what's interesting too. It wasn't a great fit in that one example is that they'd be like, so who wants to learn nunchucks? And people are like, ooh, and I'd feel like, why in the world would I want to learn nunchucks?
Right.
Like, that's just not what I'm like, what? I have no, like, who wants to learn bow staff skills? And I'd be like, bow staff skills? I have no, like, you know what I mean? I have zero interest in that.
Nunchucks, that's a 70s thing.
Yeah,
when I was a teenager, everybody had nunchucks and wanted to use
them. But I just feel like I'm not going to spend time. I'd be like, we're not communicating here. I have no interest in these things. This is, and I think a lot of people there, I felt like it was like Dungeons and Dragons for them. They're like, I'm learning bow staff. And it's like, you're like in fantasy land.
Right.
So what I wanted to say was that I found that I started questioning and being like, I don't know that what we're learning here would help me in a fight. And then some of the basic jujitsu.
Now, this was in your karate place where you're doing a little karate, a little jujitsu.
Yeah. What was interesting is a lot of the guys, I'm going to say a good half dozen of like the more, maybe slightly younger, meaning 30s and 20s, and more athletic guys would feel, were like, yeah, me too. Like, I want to know if it really works. You know, like, I want to know. So it seemed to be a common thing. It was this fantasy sort of thread going through all the training where like they tell tough guy stories. I don't know if you ever heard of a gym like this where the guy who was the head of the gym, not the local guy, but like the head of the whole organization.
Okay.
And they tell these stories about the guy.
About his prowess.
Yeah, his prowess.
Okay.
And the stories were just like they tell a story that would leave the whole class going, ooh. And I'd be like, that is the stupidest story I ever heard. Like,
give me an example. What happened?
I give you a perfect example.
Yeah.
They said Fred Villari, he would kick people between the legs.
In the groin.
Yeah, in the groin. And he'd be like, well.
In the genitals.
Yeah, no, they'd say he was good. And be like, but doesn't he hurt people? He'd be say, no. I asked Fred, how do you kick people in the groin without hurting them, like in practice? And he said, I stop when I feel testicle. It's like, and they'd be like, he has that kind of control. Class would be like, amazing. And I'd be like, what? What
did that control apply to anything other than the testicle? Like, could he stop when he felt stomach or throat or something? It was purely testicle.
I assume. They tell another
story. They use the word testicle, Darren. Are you embellishing?
Well, that's the word the guy used when he told the story.
That's the funniest thing I've ever heard in my life.
And then they told another story that was actually at odds with the first one, but it was the same kind of nonsense where he'd say, Fred cracked someone's skull. It caused some sort of damage. I think he actually cracked someone's skull was okay. the story. First of all, I was like, if he could stop when he felt testicle, he can't stop when he feels skull? Like what? So he like cracked someone's skull.
That was my previous question.
Yeah, yeah. But everyone looked right past that and it was like, Fred, what happened? How'd you crack the skull? And then like in awe, he'd like, there's this pause and he goes, well, Fred told me I accidentally let some of it out. And the whole class is again in awe. And I'm sitting there going like, am I the only one who's like, or like I'd laugh and be like, oh, sorry, was that serious? I missed.
So did he fracture a student's skull?
One of his friends.
One of his.
And actually, now I'm remembering. Hey, sorry, it's been a long
time. That's what happens between friends.
It was his friend. His friend was actually, his friend was the one who came in as like a guest. I think I paid like $40, you know, for like a guest.
Did he have a steel plate in his
head? It was like a ninth degree or something. But the ninth degree guy wouldn't do anything. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, he came in and I was like, well, let's go. I want to fight this guy. Like, let's see. And he wouldn't do anything. Like, he wouldn't show any skill. He was just like, I'm ninth degree. And also, I don't know. Like,
that's kind of an ego trap, right?
Again, where he just sort of had a vibe.
You don't want to look bad, so you just
yeah. He just sort of had a vibe where you were like,
you're not buying it.
Yeah, I don't believe this guy. Sometimes.
Right.
You know, like, so, but what I wanted to get was just that, like, these, like, 6'9" guys were all the same as me, I thought. They were like, yeah, I want to know.
These 6 or 9, what, young guys?
Yeah, young guys were like, I want to know if it works. I want to know if it works. And I'd be like, me too. Like, I'm kind of doubting it.
Right.
And they'd be like, yeah, me too. Like, we were all on the same page. So that's when I went out. And this was the only time I thought I did something kind of brave or kind of unusual.
Okay.
Which was, I did two things. I went to a boxing gym and just walked in the door and said, I want to box. And it was a hole-in-the-wall boxing gym, which I told you about.
Yeah.
And
that takes some gumption.
I found Steve Whittier.
Yep.
And he was like, jiu-jitsu. That's how I got, you know.
Where did you find Steve?
Online.
When he was in Needham?
Yep.
Okay, cool.
And I was like, I just found him and was sort of like, I still have no idea what I want to do. He said jiu-jitsu. And I was like, I already know a guy that teaches me jiu-jitsu. You know what I mean?
Right.
I sort of felt like...
You thought you might have that covered.
And so I went to cut ahead. I went to the boxing gym and got the crap kicked out of me. And like literally, I might have told you
Dan,
this.
Yeah, you do have a face screams to be punched.
But at least I got in the ring. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, they put me in the first day.
That's crazy.
And I did like a karate stance, like... Like with my hands down and the boxer across from me literally stops and goes like, dude, you can't stand like that. I'm just going to punch you in the face. You know, and I was like, what?
That was nice of him.
I'll block it. You know,
yeah.
He's like, no, those blocks won't work, man. And I'm like, oh.
And what happened? He pummeled you?
Yeah. I got pummeled there. And then I roll with Steve.
Then you went to Steve Whittier's place.
I'm forgetting sort of where I went first.
Okay, then you went to Steve's place. And when you say you rolled, for people who don't do jiu-jitsu, you mean you grappled with them. You sparred live with them.
Full force.
You were giving full force.
So this was the thing. In my experience, I'd been like, I'm sick of this nonsense.
Let's get it on.
Yeah, let's go. If I can beat you up, then I don't want to train on you. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So looking back, it must have been so annoying for Steve, who I'm friends with now, you know, but like, you know what I mean? I was some guy
like, come on, man.
Knowing nothing. And I was like, I just went really, you know, I didn't do that nice light roll.
Right.
Like I'd like try to Kimura him with as hard
did
as
Did you
I
say
started.
Before you started, it's go time.
Yeah. Let's see what you got. But no, he said like, let's roll. Like he probably showed me some moves. He said, let's roll. And I just went, you know, like that beginner.
Right.
Crazy. You know, like I try to twist his arm.
Right.
And I try everything really
and
hard.
You're kind of like. Bugs Bunny fighting the giant pro wrestler in that cartoon.
Yeah.
It's like you can't even do anything.
He just was toying with me. Like, you know, I realized like I was like, he's just, you know, he'd talk while we're rolling. Like, you know, I'd be sort of like.
He's ordering lunch. Yeah.
Well, looking back,
I'll
I was
have
a white
the Greek
belt.
Salad with the feta on the side.
Yeah, he was a brown belt. You know, so he's sort of like, yeah, that's not going to work. You know, you're exerting a lot of energy there and that's not going to like, just calm down. Like, you know, all the stuff that I would say.
Right.
Know, he was just like, look, just calm down. That's not going to. And I would be like, yeah, trying to hurt him, trying to choke him. And like at one point, I remember I was on my back, like gasping for breath. And he was sitting on my stomach, but like not the regular mount. Like he was sitting with like his feet up by my by my head. It was like sitting there talking to me while I was trying to get out. Like so I'm thrashing around and he's sitting on me going
completely
like
completely humiliating.
Explaining things to me about jiu-jitsu. You know, like, look, you're exerting a lot of energy here, but you know, as you said before, there's a lot of people, the boxing gym or the jiu-jitsu, where they don't like it. They feel like very like that was humiliating or that
right.
hurt my ego.
You feel very vulnerable, right?
For me, that was my big epiphany where I was like, wow, I was so excited. I was like, I found it. I found real fighting. You know, I found that boxer, it didn't matter what I did. He was going to beat me up.
Right.
And Steve, it didn't matter what I did. He was going to beat me up. Like that was legit. I could try as hard as I could.
Right.
And I didn't have that nonsense about in the street. I was like, if it's in the street, it'd be worse because then they'd
be worse.
You know, then
you'd be sitting on your stomach, poking your eyes out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I remember talking to it was Keith Florian actually. He was saying like someone told him like in the street I'd do this, and it was like I could bite. And Keith, and Keith was like, in the street I'd be biting you. You know, it was like if we were in the street, when I'm on top of you, who do you think's biting who?
Right.
I'll bite you if it's the street.
You know, I did witness a fight. Back in Rosie Square, the mean streets of Rosendale. Mike Collins, one of the prolific Rosie fighters, man. This guy, I don't know how many fights he had. He was on top of a guy beating the hell out of the guy, and the guy bit him many, many times in his stomach and chest. And Mike just beat the holy hell out of the guy. And Mike went away with a lot of bloody bite marks, but the other guy got beat up pretty bad. So biting isn't the panacea.
It doesn't end a fight.
No.
Well, that's what's bad about some of this self-defense where it's like, and then, you know, do the knee to the groin and he'll drop. It's like, but he might not drop.
Might not.
He probably will not drop.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, most likely will not. I remember a quick two-second karate story where this really small woman was being taught, like, on her back, one of the moves was, like, to sweep the legs out.
Right.
Someone coming at you. And she was sort of pantomiming, sweeping my legs. And I was like, you know what? Why don't you actually
do it?
Do it. And she's like, well, I don't want to hurt your leg. I was like, don't worry. She weighed like 90 pounds, you know? And I was like, no, just do it. Just once. And she like, so she's like, okay. And like swept my leg as hard as she could. And I literally barely felt it. You know, it was just like thump, a little touch on my, and she was shocked. She was like, wait, this doesn't work at all.
That's
you know,
not a good
shocked.
Feeling,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. I was like, yeah, it's not going to.
It's not working.
That's not going to work at all.
That's a bad epiphany to have.
And
right?
all our sparring was that kind of pantomiming, you know? So
yeah, it's actually probably can be some negative training. If you're training your body to do something that's not effective, that's probably going to hurt you, not help you.
But the last thing I wanted to say was, which all was leading up to like, so I came back after the boxing and rolling with Steve, the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, to these like 9 guys. And I was like, guys, I found it. Like,
you found it.
I found stuff that works. I found, I was like, boxing, this boxing gym, it works.
Okay.
These guys can really fight.
Yeah.
This Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
I get it.
I was like, you know how for a year we've been saying what really works?
Right.
I found what works. This stuff works.
And let me interrupt you. And you said, lads, follow me.
Yeah.
and you turned and you waved your arm for them to follow you. Then and they all followed you, right?
Guys. Yeah. I was just sort of like, I was like, look, not everyone is going to come with me.
Right.
You know, not, but.
But there's a lot of brave souls there.
But the story was, no one came with me. No one. And they all have different, it was like, well, you know, in a year I'm going to have a black belt. And another guy was like, well, like for.
Just got promoted.
Yeah, I just got promoted. Well, I don't know. The thing is, I'm not sure I'm that interested.
I have to rotate my tires.
So how hard did they hit you? And none of them came. And I found that again and again.
Dan, you know what? You just described the hero's journey. You're familiar with Joseph Campbell and the hero's journey?
No.
You're not.
I'm not.
You went to college, right? Yeah. At any rate, Joseph Campbell is amazing. He studied cultures from around the world. The hero's journey, the hero leaves his tribe, goes out on a quest, and has a challenge, has an adventure, and is transformed in that, and comes back with new knowledge to his tribe. That's exactly what you did. You went and did a boxing gym and got pummeled, knocked unconscious probably or something. You went to a jiu-jitsu place and got dominated, and then you came, and you were transformed, and you came back to your tribe with this new knowledge, and they then rejected you
exactly.
and all of your knowledge.
I was no longer welcome at the tribe.
Yeah.
It was, yeah, I had to leave. I got new tribes. What happened?
You got a new tribe.
Oh, yeah.
So that tribe, I'm assuming that tribe was with Steve Whittier in the jiu-jitsu tribe.
Yeah. Yeah, which quickly transformed into your gym and your.
And the boxing didn't have a tribe for you in that case.
No, I didn't have much connection with anyone.
You didn't have that connection. And how long were you doing the jiu-jitsu where you felt like, did you feel like you had changed? that you're getting the answers that you're looking for?
Well, the first change was rolling with Steve.
Right.
And being like, wait, I found something real. I'm founding a real skill here. You know, there's moments. I think there's just individual moments.
Right.
One I've mentioned to you before, which is the moment when you've had enough experience and a new person comes in.
Right.
And you're like, wait, I can do anything to this.
You have six months of training in.
Yeah.
And a new person comes in who's approximately your size and your physicality. And you effortlessly dominate them.
Yeah.
And or like, holy cow.
Or someone a lot bigger and tougher looking than you. That was another moment. It's happened a few times where someone just a lot bigger and younger than me comes in.
Right.
And I might have said this to you before, which is like if you lined up 100 people and asked them who was going to win between me and this guy, I would get zero votes.
Right.
And I can easily beat this guy. You know, like that's when you start feeling like that's the superhero.
Right.
That you want it. You know, that's
and
that's
it's a real skill set. You know, so as I mentioned before, there are people who are natural fighters. They just have aggression and explosiveness and they can just fight naturally. But that's pretty rare. And fighting is a skill that can be taught and can be learned by somebody. Although I think most people feel it doesn't work that way. I think people look at certain skill sets like fighting or singing or acting where they're just somebody's a natural or they're not.
Absolutely true with fighting. To this day, I mean, maybe it's different for you running a gym, but for me, you know, if there was just a big guy standing there, like you knew nothing about him.
Right.
My friends that aren't in the gym that know that I've been training, would look at, you know, some big tough looking guy. They would, to this day, laugh at the idea that I could beat, you know, they'd be like, oh, please.
Yeah.
They'd be like, how do you know if that guy can fight? Like, they don't believe that there's skill involved.
Yeah.
They don't believe, you know, they don't believe, you know.
That must be changing now with the popularity of the UFC when you see all kinds of people out there performing.
Nerdy looking guys. And,
yeah, some guy. Yeah, not always the most impressive, physically impressive looking guy wins. That must be changing. I think it is. When I first started, occasionally a big muscular guy would come in and he would roll with some smaller technical skill jiu-jitsu guy and the smaller guy would armbar him. And I've seen this happen on more than one occasion, but it was a long, long time ago. The guy would slam his fist into the mat, swear something, stand up and storm out and never come back again. Like he just couldn't believe it. And I don't think that happens as much anymore. I actually haven't seen that happen in a long, long time. Like we have guys come in our gym and they'll train with some of the women that have experience and developed a certain mastery and skills. And the women will dominate them and they don't get pissed off and leave. And they hang in there and develop their skills. So it must be changing.
Yeah, it could be. That's at least of people in the gym. I still think like among my friends, like that don't train or like the masses that don't train, they'll still sort of be like this
idea that
you can assess fighting outside of skill. Like, I don't know.
Right. When you mention martial arts, probably 89% of the population will start making chopping motions.
Yeah, karate chops.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you do jiu-jitsu and the karate chop. Like maybe like a tough actor. I can't think of one that comes to mind, like not even a legit athletic looking one, but like maybe someone that plays crazy roles, like a young Jack Nicholson or someone, you know, be like, oh, I would not want to mess with that guy. You know, it's like, what? But that's not, he's not,
right.
What do you mean, that guy? Like, you know, like I think some people still assess fighting based on like we did when we were 12 years old, like this guy seems scary to me. And I don't believe that, they don't think of like, does he know how to fight?
No, like I think you're right. Now, did you find any personal transformation when you finally found jiu-jitsu and that tribe? You were a different person than prior to starting?
Well, less so in that I was already, you know, older, you know, so a lot of my, you know, wasn't formative years. But it's not like, then I walked around beating everyone in fights and defending myself. Like,
well,
I wasn't ever going to, because people ask me this a lot and maybe ask you, where they're like, well, why do you need to learn that? You don't fight anybody.
Right. I'll tell you, for me, I just feel so much better. And maybe I'm deluding myself, but after I gained a certain level of mastery in jiu-jitsu and fighting in general, I had a lower level of anxiety. So I think I haven't had a bad dream in decades. You know what I mean? Where you're fighting somebody scary and the monster is going to get you. I think a lot of that just goes away. I think I'm better in road rage incidents. So if somebody cuts me off and flips me the bird, I still get a little stress response. I get a little excited, but I don't get as excited as maybe prior to that. I think if you're lacking the self-knowledge of how well you can handle yourself, if somebody provokes you, it's more exciting because you're afraid and you don't know. There's a mystery. There's an unknown. You're like, Jesus, can I handle myself? Where do I fit? Is this guy superior fighter than me? I don't know. Now, I don't care as much about that.
That's true of me, and I've heard that from a lot of people, and it's that you're less likely to fight because you also don't feel like embarrassed.
You don't have to prove yourself.
You're like, if someone's bothering you, at, you know, some drunk's bothering you, say, in a bar, you don't have this inner like, oh, I better prove that I'm not like this
when that
wimp,
happens
you
to
know?
Me.
Because you're like, I know I'm not.
Right.
I go to this gym all the time. Like, I don't.
I just throw a kick at their testicles and stop right when I feel testicle.
Or you just
I shut it down.
Yeah, that sends a message. I'll be like, I'm this close to letting it out. Don't make me let it out.
When I started jiu-jitsu, it was wonderful. And at that time, we felt like we were sort of in on something that wasn't as popular. So I definitely felt part of a tribe and sort of a secret group or organization that wasn't as widespread. And that was very exciting. Yeah. And then I did feel better about myself.
I think that's changed, but probably less, not as much as you think it's changed. Because both of us, we've been involved in this for so long that it's like, well, now everyone knows jiu-jitsu, but I don't think they do. Like, I think a lot of people, a lot more do,
yeah.
But you can go out to, you know, the mall and who knows about it, and people don't know.
I think you're right.
People don't know what it is. People don't know Japanese jiu-jitsu is different than Brazilian
right.
jiu-jitsu or anything like that.
I think that happens in a lot of groups, in a lot of tribes, so to speak, where you're surrounded by your people and you start to assume this is the way people think. And, you know, how did that person get elected? I don't know anybody who voted for him and this type of thing. And it's really a factor of being sort of a little bit insulated in your group. So I think you're right. And in this world also, I think you lose track of what average ruggedness is. You know, I see the average person that comes in and trains with us. I'm like, that's the average ruggedness for an American male. Then I go out in the real world and I realize, oh, no, that's not it at all. Yeah.
Well, this is true of me because I felt very average. You know, and I was just sort of like, I'm the average guy. Like, anyone would do what I do. Like, almost anyone. Like, you know, I sort of felt like, okay, the wimpiest of guys would not go into a boxing gym or not, you know. But then it turned out like I was wrong. Like, I was like, wait, none of these guys will do it.
Right. And they were already interested in martial arts.
Yeah. And that was my shock. I was actually shocked.
That is shocking.
I was shocked that no one, I was like 0%. I thought maybe lowest half. And they didn't, and it's not like, oh, it was inconvenient. They wanted to go to another gym or they never went to anything like that.
Well, I think everyone has a different comfort zone. And of course, the most important thing is to always try to expand that comfort zone. And they were already outside their comfort zone in that karate gym and they weren't prepared to go further outside. So maybe they had good self-knowledge. They realized that it's not going to go well for them. But the wonderful thing about jiu-jitsu is it's a very safe environment for the most part. If you're in a proper academy, you're really very, very safe. It may not feel safe, but it is safe, which is the beauty of it. You can feel like somebody's going to kill you, but you're really not going to get hurt at the end of the day.
Well, the scariest part is, I think, walking through the door for the first time. And
definitely.
The way I've tried to explain it to some of my friends who I've also, friends and family who I've also failed to convince to train, that it's like, look, schools aren't going to keep open with everyone getting their nose broken every day.
Oh, right.
And like, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, maybe there's some. But in general, these are businesses and people can't run a school or an academy being like only the toughest of the tough can make it here. Like if you come in day one, you're going to be beaten and kicked. Like,
can't be the Navy SEALs where 80% of the people are going to wash out. That's not a great business model.
Yeah. Nobody
How
wants
do you run
to...
your business? We try to drive off 80% of our customers.
Yeah, exactly. I think people need to understand that it's the hard part is just walking in.
Absolutely.
And getting out of
And that's the essential part. So wherever you are, wherever your comfort zone is, stepping just outside your comfort zone consistently is the key. And if you do that, of course, your comfort zone expands. Then you step out a little further and so forth. The opposite, if you stay inside your comfort zone, unfortunately, it'll eventually shrink and shrink till you're stuck on your couch with your remote control in your hand and nothing's happening to you. And
you say, why would I leave this couch? It's just more annoyances are going to happen to me.
I think so. If you don't challenge yourself, there's no growth. With growth, that's living. Without growth, you're dying. You're slowly slipping into a coma. Your life is shrinking. It's just not the way to go about things, for sure. So, Dan, I think we should wrap it up. This is awesome hearing your origin story.
You got to hear your superhero origin story.
I gave mine briefly. Yeah, maybe we'll expand on it later.
Next time, yeah.
But it was great to hear it. And you're hilarious, of course. So, everybody, this is Power of the Tribe. My name's John Connors. I'm the founder and head instructor at Connors Martial Arts. We're here in Norwood, Massachusetts. We teach Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, Muay Thai kickboxing, and mixed martial arts. And if you want to make a major change in your life, just reach out to me on Instagram, Facebook. You can email me at john@dedumjj.com. Joining a tribe is going to be the most effective way for you to make a major positive change in your life. So thanks for listening, and please tune in for our next podcast episode.